Welcome to season 4 of the Intersection Hub podcast. This season, we are changing the conversation. We are going to go beyond talking about the challenges the charitable sector faces and start spotlighting charities who are offering us hope, hope for a new way forward in 3 primary areas. That's right. In this season, we are sharing 8 real examples of organizations who are advancing anti-racist work, moving forward with trust-based philanthropy, and taking care of the physical and mental well-being of their staff. So thank you for sharing a little bit of your day with us. Let's get to it. Conversations about diversity, equity, inclusion, and belonging are essential in every organization. They are also just the beginning of important anti-racist work. Today we are spotlighting one charity that goes beyond DEI workshops and is expecting all of their staff to join them on an anti-racist journey. At the Downtown Boxing Gym in Detroit, Michigan, founder Collie Sweeney and their executive director Jessica Hauser realized one day that while their organization had grown, racist practices started to creep in. Collie and Jessica quickly realized they needed to go beyond a workshop and their DEI policies and to protect their staff, as well as their 200 plus boys and the girls that they serve from letting white dominance take over. Today, I'm joined in conversation with Jessica about what that looked like, what they did, and how they continue to work with their staff and consistently ask themselves, are we centering the most marginalized voice in this conversation? Before we get started, let me tell you a little bit about DBG and Jessica. DBG, the Downtown Boxing Gym, is a nationally recognized Detroit-based nonprofit organization that breaks down barriers and provides vital resources to help students thrive. Now in its 15th year, DBG serves approximately 200 students ages 8 to 18 with continuing support through to age 25. That includes the first year's college and launching a career. The free out-of-school time program has a 100% high school graduation rate since its inception. That's pretty incredible. And DBG knocks down barriers like food insecurity, transportation, the digital divide, and provides holistic, personalized learning plan for each student, enrichment programming for college and career readiness, and social-emotional skill building. These are basic needs and so, so much more. Jessica is a passionate nonprofit leader, and she continues to help DBG navigate significant growth by enabling the program to serve a diverse and growing up group of amazing leaders. She has a bachelor's degree in political science from Oakland University and completed coursework in the International Children's Rights at the University of Michigan. Jessica's partner in life and in work, Collie Sweeney, is the founder of the Downtown Boxing Gym and had planned to join us in this conversation. But at the time of this recording, he was recovering from a concussion. So while unable to join us, he was certainly cheering us on from the sidelines. So every single day, Collie and Jessica expect all of their staff, just like the kids they serve, to become the next best version of themselves. And as you listen to this conversation, I am sure that you will agree with me that Collie and Jessica and all of their staff are having a massive impact in their community. You are going to love this. Let's get into it. Jessica, thank you so much for joining us in the Hub. I liked you the second I met you, and I'm so grateful for this connection. How are you doing?
Doing really great. I felt exactly the same. Really excited to be here.
Oh, good, 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 good. All right. Now, I've already introduced you and Collie in the introduction, but can you tell us a little bit about Downtown Boxing Gym and the work that you do there?
Yeah, absolutely. So the name of our program can be quite misleading. It's actually not about boxing at all. Of our over 200 kids, none of them compete in the sport of boxing. Our founder and CEO started this program really to create a space he wished he would have had, which means that when our kids come here, every single kid is able to be seen and heard by the adults in this space. And then from that point, an individualized plan is created for every child from a mentoring and academic perspective. So it's really about long-term mentoring, long-term academic support, and truly just building a family and a, you know, another network for our kids to be part of.
I love what you said about kids, making sure that kids feel seen and heard. It's amazing, isn't it, how we just drag them through life without really making eye contact?
Yeah. And, or, you know, unfortunately, society just layers so many false narratives on our young people that then become reality for them, right? I mean, Khalid's story is that he was told he was going to be dead or in jail by the time he was 21 on a consistent basis. You hear that enough, especially as a kid, and you just think, well, I guess that's my destiny. And so we just can't be another space that's doing stuff like that.
Right. There is a little bit of boxing there, yeah?
I mean, we have two boxing rings. All our kids learn the discipline of the sport, but that is not what we're pushing. It really is. It's really, really used as a tool. It creates a safe space for kids to be able to say they're going to a boxing gym. Nobody's going to make fun of you for doing that.
Right. You don't want to say to your classmates, oh, I have to go to reading class.
No.
Right.
No. And it also tends to attract kids that are labeled as bullies. Mm. You know, and there's obviously some underlying issue happening there, or kids that are getting bullied, which are the kids that don't typically, you know, they're like, they fall on the margins. They don't typically ever, you know, kind of fall into the groove of the traditional school system. And so they're slipping through the cracks, and we're here creating that safety net for them.
So as I was preparing for this interview, I was especially touched by one of the videos on your website, which is a soapbox speech by a third grader, Aluda Pukum, who talks about teaching kindness.
Yes.
And that we're not doing enough in the world to teach kindness. And I'll put that link to that video in the show notes for anybody who wants to see the most amazing speech from a third grader. Before we get into organizational culture and the shift and the values of DBG, what is kindness? How do you guys teach kindness every day?
Yeah, I know. When Alauda started presenting, it was like everyone's heart just about exploded. And no wiser words have been said, right? Like if we were just kind to each other, the world would be totally different place.
And he went beyond Alauda, is how you said it. Okay, good. He went beyond saying, if we're just kind to each other, he said, I realized that someone taught kindness to somebody.
Yep.
And my friend God taught kindness to me, and we need to teach it and be intentional about it.
Yes. Yeah. I mean, that, you know, in this space, that's something that Kali and the team, we all, for us, kindness is, it comes through in many ways. One, I would say one of my favorite quotes, which is one of our culture statements, is we don't see bad kids. We see kids that haven't been hurt yet. Mm. And that applies for adults in our space as well. But it is, kindness really looks like, going back to the original kind of part of our conversation, of having a safe space where everyone is seen, everyone is welcomed, everyone is supported, right? And for who they are, whatever that means. And there's lots of conversations in this space around not judging, just really being welcoming for everyone, to everyone. And so that, you know, that's one part of it. The other part is within our organization is like really expecting a lot out of how our adults show up for our kids. Mm-hmm. And that we have to be on a journey of, for lack of a better term, like self-actualization, mm-hmm. in order to create a space that is kind and that is welcoming and not, you know, just all kind of feeds into that same theory, but that's how that shows up in our space, right? It's not fake niceness. It's like true, deep respect.
It's not performative. That's
right.
That is the meat about what we're talking about today, is how your organization is moving beyond performance-based behavior and digging into the root of creating systemic change.
Mm-hmm.
So, and we've talked about this before, you've had some challenges around that and some times where you've had to stop and go, wait, is this who we are? I wonder if you could speak, before we dig into that, a little bit more about the difference between DBG, I got that right, Downtown Boxing Gym. Yes. Mm-hmm. If you could speak a little bit more about what it was like in 2007 versus where it is now in 2023.
Yeah, absolutely. So the amazing thing is that the mission, the heartbeat of this space has never changed. And that's quite rare for an organization that's, my gosh, almost 16 years old at this point. That has always stayed true. But of course, there are huge organizational changes as we've grown from Kali running it on his own with no donations coming in. And yet the program, you know, has always been free for our families, continues to be. Now we have a staff of 50, you know, $4 million annual budget, like lots of changes from an organization perspective. And as you know, and the things that were just, I'll say, like, just who we are, how we operated, what we did, the day you wake up and you're like, oh, we need to explicitly state these things, or we need to find other ways to capture what was just always inherent.
Right.
And so there's just been so much learning around that, and continue. I mean, we can continue to learn every day around like that shift so that we don't lose the mission. Cause if you don't continue to evolve those pieces and like finding the right way to hold people accountable and communicate what's actually happening, then what suffers is the work. It's, you know, that's how I would say so many, often how companies become really cookie cutter or whatever, like the heart, but you lose the heart if you don't kind of continue to evolve.
Yeah. And we're going to talk a little bit more about what that heartbeat is. But how do you know if you're starting to lose it?
You know, there's a few different ways. So we are very introspective here and are always evaluating performance, like how performance is a strange word, but like evaluating our impact.
Right.
And we do that through a number of things. We do it one just through youth voice, right? Like, is it working? Is it still landing? Does this still feel like your home, your family, your, you know, what you're part of? We also have been working with the researcher for 10 years now, conducting third party evaluation research that looks at areas that are indicators of lifelong success. And that evaluation model is something we're super proud of. We took a lot of time to figure out, what do we need to be looking at to know if what we think we're doing, we're doing.
Mm-hmm.
And so that's an annual evaluation, but there's key data that comes out of that, that if you start to see kids trending down in, you know, around self-efficacy or sense of agency or right, like the stuff that's really important,
mm-hmm.
got to ask ourselves a question of what's happening, right? And is it something that we are or are not doing here anymore that is causing a downward trend?
Right.
And we also talk to our parents a lot. I mean, that is just something that Kali has always been really adamant about, is there is no shame in being like, oh, that was a misstep. We need to regroup and figure out what we're doing and like get back on track. It would be a problem if we didn't if we didn't look at that, didn't own it, and didn't correct the behaviors. So that's just part of the design.
You're really talking about an an ongoing, consistent organizational bravery to really look in the mirror and make sure that adjustments are made to maintain this heartbeat that you speak of.
Yes.
Yeah.
100%.
Yeah. You talked a little bit about this concept of making sure that people, staff, and children feel safe and heard. And I wonder if you could speak a little bit about how you work on creating that psychological safe. Actually, I'm making an assumption that your organization would be a safe place for me to work and express dissent and bring my whole self forward. Is it? I think it is. Yes.
Yeah. I mean, that absolutely is always the goal, you know, and depending on different mixes of people, sometimes that goes smoother than other times, but the expectation from at all levels, all people is we want healthy debate. We want points of, there should always be points of tension, points of discourse. If we're not, then we're all just coasting and something is wrong, right?
Yeah. Yeah.
And actually what we found to be the biggest pain points historically is not the people that are speaking up. It's the people that makes really uncomfortable, right? So it's people that are like conflict averse and they're viewing someone having a passionate opinion as a conflict instead of what it is, which is they're just expressing their view and they're feeling super passionate about it. And like, let's lean in and not run away from it. Where we've had, you know, issues is, you know, just some, for some people that is not, it's not comfortable. Mm-hmm. Our viewpoint is this work cannot be done without that. You know, if the way the world is currently operating was going to solve the problems that are impacting our young people and families, like if what we are currently doing as a world was working, it would all be rainbows and sunshine, right? Like mm-hmm. it's not. Mm-hmm. So that means we got to press on stuff and figure it out and test assumptions and look at ourselves and figure out, like, what am I doing that's continuing to feed white dominant culture that is like not healthy and helpful? What are we doing as a group that is where we're not stepping back and making sure we're, you know, really, really thinking outside of the box? And that stuff's not comfortable for everyone.
So before we talk about white dominated culture in an organization that is primarily driven by and filled with people of color, can we talk a little bit more about is there anything specifically that you do to create that psychological safety for your staff? Is it a matter of just always having a lens and watching to see the people who are shying away or to notice those things? What does it really take to create a safe environment for those discussions?
Yeah, I think it's a lot of modeling, right? So I'll just use Kali as an example, but leadership of all, I mean, this is not just Kali doing this, but you know, he's willing to put himself out there and in a way that where he's vulnerable, where he's putting forward, you know, ideas that could be perceived as controversial, let's say for a thought exercise, right? Like if he's modeling that behavior of mm-hmm. I'm taking a risk mm-hmm. with the hope of, you know, benefiting the team, mm-hmm. right? Staff of all of our, like there are people who at all levels that do something very similar. And actually you would think, well, he's the CEO. It's easy for him to do it. It's the hardest for him to do that. Because mm-hmm. people, you know, he is a target. The CEOs of any company, I don't care how big or how small, like you are the people love to not love you. You know what
right.
I mean?
Like, yeah, yeah, yeah.
It's the nature of the beast. And so the perspective is if he's willing to do it and he would be the most vulnerable in many respects. From that perspective is like, all right, we can all do that, right? If he's willing to say like, I want, please tell, like, let's debate this thing. Like I'm not, nobody's trying to be right or wrong. We can agree to disagree. We can all those things, right? So a lot of modeling, we've spent a lot of time reworking internal and are continuing to rework internal documents to, as we learn what stuff needs to be made more explicit. So like historically, it's just part of the fabric of the organization that we always had really open, honest conversations about race and gender and religion, and like all everything was on the table. And as you grow the number of team members, if you don't explicitly say that that's what's happening in the space, that can be really scary for people. And so we've been working and iterating and reiterating, you know, over and over, like, oh, we've now realized we need to say that this thing's happening. We need to, you know, write down that this thing is happening in our space. We need to create a video that these things are happening in our space, because people take information in all different ways.
Right.
So I think it's a combination of like modeling, feeding people with information, being straight up about what they're, you know, the environment they're stepping into, incorporating this kind of work in every meeting of every kind, so that it just becomes normal practice.
Mm-hmm.
You know, like rewarding that type of behavior mm-hmm. in different ways, to where that just is like where people start to realize, oh, right, that not only are they saying it's supported and desired, but they're actually like, that's what I'm getting lifted up for.
All right.
So, you know, we just try to think about it and hit on it from every different direction to reinforce the culture.
I wonder if we can get into some specifics around this. And I can't help but have one of those squirrel moments that I have. It's kind of like with my kids, I always talked about sex and bodily functions at the table so that when they were teenagers, it was not a big deal. And they're like, yeah. Oh yeah, Ma. Okay. Here you go again. And then it was just always normal. And I think when you talk about diversity, equity, and inclusion work versus very specific anti-racism policies, is that kind of similar?
From a, you mean just talking about it all the time?
Yeah, or just making it normal constantly. Like, this is not a big deal. We are always going to dig in.
Yes. That's why we pull it into all meetings. In various ways, but and are continuing to learn how do we do it even more and even more and even more, so that it just becomes completely normal.
So I feel like acknowledging for listeners, we are two white women having this conversation, and Kali was unable to join us because he's unwell today. So that's fine, and he knows we're talking about him.
He does.
He does. So, which is probably a good thing for him today. But
yes, he really wanted to be here. He's really sad, but
it's all right. That's all
right. Health has to take a priority.
For sure. So what does that look like? Can you give us an example? Because I mean, he's an African American man who founded an organization. At what point did he stop and go, oh, wait, maybe this isn't the kind of culture I want to perpetuate and I need to be intentional about this?
Yeah, I would say, interestingly enough, is like, this is always something he's been super passionate about, is making sure because of his, I think in large part because of his lived experience of not being seen, not being heard, having narratives created for him.
Mm-hmm.
It's something that he's always been hypersensitive about, is really trying to spot when that's happening. What we found in the last, let's say, I mean, COVID was such a strange period of time for everyone, but let's say the last 3 to 4 years, right? COVID, I think, exacerbated some of this, but as we've grown, the way that he and other, you know, some of us were able to mitigate and call out some of these behaviors, and it just doesn't work in the same way anymore. And so that's where we needed to rework and figure out how do we make this, you know, make sure that everyone is on a journey of anti-racism, and that it is pulled into other spaces so that it doesn't, so it is not just like there's not an undercurrent of white dominant culture running through our building and we're not aware of it until all of a sudden something blows up. So, you know, some examples of how that was showing up that we realized, oh, shoot, that we would have caught when we were an organization of 10, you know, but it's not as easy anymore.
Yeah.
Is, you know, a team member, a non-white team member would be super passionate talking about a topic, and the reflection from some team members was like, oh, that person was really scary and intimidating. A white team member could say the exact same thing. And it was like, oh, that person's so passionate, right? Mm-hmm. Like,
look,
I mean,
how much they care about that.
Wow. Right. But that's the stuff that we're like, shoot, because those two different conversations were happening in two different spaces.
Yeah.
We couldn't mitigate it because we didn't know that was happening until there was a couple moments where we're like, holy crap. Okay. Mm. Like, this is not good. Mm. You know, this is like now starting to seep into our culture in a way that is will never be okay. Mm. And so we need to make sure we need to name it. We need to like just call it out and find and then bring it to everyone's attention on an ongoing basis so that when others see it, it just becomes normal practice that we're stopping it immediately, right? And like peer-to-peer confrontation around that stuff has got to be normal.
Yeah.
Otherwise, it will never work. Like that will be the death of any program. Right. I mean, it's not just this space.
Yeah. And so holding each other accountable to that is now ingrained in your culture.
Yeah, I mean, we've made huge strides. We're actually in the process of reworking our onboarding documentation and some other written pieces, just because that's how some people take in information mm-hmm. to name some of these things. I think this is always a work in process, but we've made huge strides just by calling it out, you know, and including it in different conversations. But everyone's at a different point of awareness. And so I would say like this work is a lifetime's work and does not just end, mm-hmm. but it's getting better.
Yeah, you can't just have bring in a DEI consultant for a day, no. And have everybody go to a retreat and then go, okay, done and dusted.
No, in fact, there were some folks that were trying to push us to like, oh, you just need to do a training. Mm-hmm. We're like, I mean, okay, but this work is not a check the box work. We need to own it. We need to drive it. We need to be the ones taking the risks to say, this is what we're seeing here. This is how it's showing up. This is how we're treating each other. You know, we need to be constantly pushing every group, you know, when we're having conversations, are we centering the most marginalized person in the room? Is that the voice that's being listened to? Mm-hmm. You know, in many cases, as a white woman, my opinion about, you know, a particular subject matter is irrelevant. Like my role is to listen and learn, period. And I think there's an unfortunate disservice that's happened through the mindset of like, oh, we can just do a training and we're good. Everyone's good. We'll do it once a year. Everyone will be great. We can say we're doing that thing. And like the mm-hmm. world, again, like everything's rainbows and sunshine.
Right.
It's
that's
like,
right. Yeah.
No.
Yeah. It's
all this fun. Is an everyday, all day journey.
I love what you said about a very easy question to check yourself is, are we centering the most marginalized woman or person in the room? That's a wonderful kind of before you start a meeting or for leaders in the space, just to remind themselves or have that printed across the top of their notepad or something, yeah. Just as a constant reminder, because we default to what we've been taught.
Yeah.
And we haven't been taught to do that.
Right.
But then yeah. I also think about, you may not know who the most marginalized person in the room is at any given time, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And I think that's very true. And in different spaces, I think there's probably different opportunities of understanding around that. I would say in our space, because there's more of an, there is an expectation for everyone to share their testimony with our kids, no matter what team you're on, there's a bit more of an understanding of who we all are as humans outside of these walls. And so, you know, as I would say, but that's probably quite unique. I don't know that that's, you know, in most business spaces.
I am so fascinated by that. So not to put you on the spot, but this leads right into our next piece around being on a journey of self-actualization. So encouraging folks on your team to share their testimony and to know what that is. Do you have one?
Oh, absolutely.
Can you share this?
Yes. I had a very interesting upbringing. My dad got hit and killed by a drunk driver when I was really young. Sent my family into a spiral of just emotional issues. Yeah. And, you know, and then just led to me needing to like really lean on additional support to make sure first, you know, stability and guidance because of everything that was going on. And I also grew up in an incredibly wealthy community, but on government assistance. So it was, you know, that dynamic, while the outside world, if you didn't know, you didn't know. I knew. And, you know, as a young person growing up, like that has definitely played a role in my just human development. And, you know, that journey has been really a powerful one to share with our kids, because the way that society in our region, in the Detroit area, the way it's talked about is everyone who lives north of 8 Mile is like all, you know, white picket fence, dog, two kids, all the money in the world, mom and dad, just like everyone's happy, everyone's healthy, everything's great. And that was not my lived experience. In fact, I can tell you that was not the lived experience of most people that I knew growing up. I mean, most people I knew had financial resources, but like not necessarily happy life. And I think just that realization of there are problems everywhere, you know, really has served as a source of just, I want to say like a sanity check for a lot of our kids of like, oh, right, we're not like, and for so many of our families are 1,000 times more stable than my family was, 1,000 times more financially stable than my, like, are you kidding? Like, I would have died to have, in some cases, the love and stability. I mean, I had love around me, but just, you know, some of the stability that our families have. And so just understanding that there is good and bad and all the things everywhere has been really important, a really important thing for me to share.
The example of you sharing, as you call it, your testimony, which I love, and encouraging other people to dig into their testimony and share it, must create sort of a permission for people to look at themselves. And so then what comes to mind for me in that is that you don't have your, as some of my former clients have called, service users or beneficiaries or students up against the staff. It's like we all are here in this hot mess of humanity together. And your story is equally as important as my story, and seeing that from through each other's perspective must build a more cohesive, safer environment for people.
Yeah, I mean, it really humanizes each other.
Yeah, yeah. And we don't really have that. You know, charities are well known for being dysfunctional when it comes to how they treat their staff. So encouraging your staff, being giving them permission to really wear those badges of honor must create a healthier culture for folks.
Mm-hmm. That's the goal.
That's the goal. Are there any examples of when that might not have worked out for people?
I would say, you know, the only time that I've seen it where it's never been terror, and there's never been a bad situation. The only time that we've had to offer some coaching is it's when if people start to compare, right? Like, I understand your journey because I've done X, Y, and Z, or if I've had X, Y, and Z done to me. And it's like, well, no, you, that doesn't mean you understand. Like, yeah. I'll never know what it's like to be you. Yeah. I will never know what it's like to be you. You'll never know what it's like to be me. I can empathize. Mm-hmm. I can use my lived experience to, you know, like try to like gain some understanding, mm-hmm. but I should never be, when you start to go down the path of comparing, that's where it just goes all bad. Right.
Yeah.
And so it doesn't happen often, but every once in a while there will be funny moments where not funny in a good way, but just like, time out.
Like, yes. It makes me think about my ex-husband and I, my first husband. We would sometimes get into these insane conversations at the end of the day. And it was almost like a competition to see whose day was harder. And it's like, wait, hang on a second. All I want you to say is that you see me,
yep.
you hear me, and you're sorry I had a hard day. I'm not ready to think about what a tough day you've had because I'm still swimming in all of this.
Yep, exactly. Exactly. You know, so, but thankfully, because that work is done through the lens of how we're showing up for the mission, it doesn't often take a, you know, a turn in that direction, but there have been a few times where we've had to, help some folks course correct.
Right. What are some other ways that you help your staff meet their, you know, take care of their mental and physical health so that they can serve better?
Yeah, I mean, so we do our best to set a tone here that you know yourself best. And so we have never gotten in the practice of like trying to help you help yourself, you know, like, let me tell you how you can, what you need to do to take care of yourself. We try really hard to create a space where like, we trust you. If you know, you know, we have take as you need PTO, right? So there's not a limit. I mean, obviously.
I'm from Canada. Okay, so I've got to guess what PTO is.
Oh, sorry, paid time off.
Paid time off, okay.
Yep.
So take whatever you need.
Whatever you need. I mean, yes, if you took every single day, I would probably have a problem. But, you know, it's truly take as you need, which means it's going to ebb and flow, right? There'll be times in your life that you're going to have to take more time because there are things going on, and other times that you're working weekends because that's what has to happen. And both are okay. And as long as there's enough trust and relationship and you see that we're investing in you, we see you're investing in the mission, like, that is a big way that we support the, you know, mental and physical health.
Yeah. I mean, because so many young mothers, for example, have to force their kids to go to school when they're sick because they have to go to work and they don't have any more days they can take off. And then it gets even more sick. If they could have just hunkered down and watched movies for a day, everybody would.
Right. And then for that mom that knows their kid is at school sick, I mean, is she really mentally here anyways? Probably not.
No.
And so it's just better for everyone.
Yeah.
Just take the time you need. And so, you know, we implemented that a couple of years ago. It was always a goal of ours. We just didn't have a big enough staff to be able to support if different people, you know, if there was a couple of people off, but we're at a place now where we can. So we do.
Right.
And yeah, and then, you know, we are a gym. And so there's also the, when our kids leave, there's the option to stay in, you know, for the physical fitness component, but exercise. And we've had times because we've, you know, feed our kids that if food isn't, you know, food insecurity is something that's happening for someone for some reason. Like I know there's a time period where someone was having, their power was out for a long time. They had no other place to get, like what we have a kitchen, like cook your food, take food we have, whatever needs to happen for some of our younger team members, especially. So, you know, just whatever resources we have that we've built up for our families are also resources for our team. And, you know, it's just truly that family environment of like the same mental model that we use for our kids is like, hey, where are the gaps and how can we help step in? Mm-hmm. Same goes for our employees as well.
I love that you're lifting everybody. I have to ask, do you think that some of these practices around culture have resulted in financial stability?
I mean, I sure hope so, and it appears to be the case. It's something that we've fought really hard for, is to be able to pay people a competitive wage. Is that what you mean? Or you mean for the organization?
For your organization as well, because the scarcity mindset of many executive CEOs of organizations is if we give personal time off, paid time off without any limit on it, it's going to cost us money. If we give our staff food, we're not going to have enough food for our benefit.
Oh yeah.
You know, no. All of those things are.
Yeah. I would say scarcity mindset is the death to any, like that you will take yourself down when you approach it.
Yes. I couldn't agree with you more. So all of the things that you have mentioned as examples of digging in to the humanity of your staff as well as your beneficiaries, there are organizations who just want their staff to perform.
Yep.
And as a result, the mental and physical fitness of their staff is compromised. And I'm just wondering if you can point to any budget stories about money. Like, do you think that this is creating a more financially solvent organization?
Yeah, I mean, I would say the answer is yes. And it is because, you know, longevity with a team creates stability for an organization, which then creates, you know, really positive outcomes, which creates a way for us to raise money, which creates financial stability.
Yes.
So,
okay.
You know, staff turnover is very expensive.
Yes.
Happy staff that is not pouring into our kids is counterproductive and very expensive because you got to remedy it, right? Like all the things that happen as a result of not lifting each other up, tears down the organization as a whole.
Mm-hmm. That's perfect. I'm so glad that we got to that point. Yeah. The concept of constantly encouraging staff to be the best next version of themselves, because this is what you expect from your kids.
Yeah.
So your values are aligned with everybody who shows up for you.
Yeah, which really also starts with us hiring the right team members, right? Which we've invested a ton of time and energy into. How do you interview and do the best you can to vet, to get the right talent?
Right.
That's the starting point. And we've had lots of starts and stops on that front too.
And constantly working to get that formula right.
Oh yeah. That probably is an ongoing journey.
But you'd also need to make a tough call early on, right? When you see that there isn't a cultural fit there.
Yep.
When you see that somebody is not willing to admit that they've been grown up in a racist society, impossible to, you know,
oh, it's for sure.
to move the needle if they come in with that mindset.
Yep. And we've had those, we've had those moments and several of them, and it is being brave enough to confront it head on. And if there's not a willingness to take a look at that, it's like, this is just not the place for you. And to repeat a phrase of a dear friend of ours, it's like, you can leave in love, right? Like, we will love you from afar. There is no hard feelings, but you just can't be in this space. Mm-hmm. And I think that's, you know, really critical to be able to catch those moments and, you know, quickly remedy them, because it's bound to happen. You can't. Mm-hmm. I wish with an interview, you know, you just
knew.
All be psychic and you knew, but that's not the case, you know?
Yeah. But that also speaks to being what we talked about earlier, a brave organization.
Mm-hmm.
Being brave enough to call it when you see it and go,
yes,
yeah, we're going to protect everybody else here by saying goodbye to you right now.
That's right.
Yeah.
Right. And no matter how the person, I mean, you know, it doesn't always go smooth. And and that's where keeping our kids at the center is. If you lose that, if you lose the focus, then I think that leads to losing the bravery. But if you keep our kids in the mission at the center, then you do anything to protect them.
Yeah, right.
Mm-hmm.
So the last question with everybody this season is, are you ready?
I'm ready.
If we were to end this conversation right now, what's left unsaid?
Yeah, I think I feel like I said it already, but I'm just going to say the first thing that comes to mind is that I think there's a false narrative in the world that this journey of anti-racism is one that you can complete at some point. Mm-hmm. And I think as white people, I firmly believe that we can never claim to not be racist, right? We are benefiting from a system that was designed for us to thrive and to have people, you know, Black people in particular, but all people of color not. And I just think there's a strange dynamic in our world that people think that just like, oh, we can solve, like it just can be solved without dismantling systems and truly completely changing how the world works. And so I just think there's so much more to talk about there and dig into and call out in business, and like, just the only way that we're gonna make a dent in this work. So that's what came to mind for me.
Well, I am willing to dig into that with you anytime. Thank you so much for this conversation. It's really, I've loved getting to know you.
Thank you so much for the opportunity.
I could have talked to Jessica forever, and I can't wait until our next conversation. What a fabulous example of an organization that takes care of each other so that they can work together to ensure that every child and staff member who walks into their doors are treated with kindness, compassion, and respect. Please be sure to check out the show notes to learn more about DBG and Jessica, but also to see Alauda's amazing speech on how he learned to be kind. You will not regret it. Thank you for making this conversation a priority in your day. We are so glad that you are part of this community. Please remember to share, review, subscribe to this podcast, join the email list, check out intersectionhub.ca to do that. And if you have more examples of charities that you think we should spotlight next season, please do let us know. See you next time.